This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the April 27th, 2020 For Your Benefit radio show. Actually, it'll be the last show of the financial planning month, I believe. And we have Joe Sullender. Joe is a certified financial planner, fellow seminar presenter, but his main passion in life is being the managing director of Financial Strategies Group, Wells Fargo Advisors. Wow. I'm impressed. Good morning, Joe.
Hello. Good morning.
It's always a pleasure. Joe is extremely knowledgeable, able to put the hard-to-understand words in understandable language, and we've been working together 30-plus years.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I think it's been about that. 25. Let's go 25. Makes me feel younger.
Okay, 25. Well, you look young. All righty, and you are young. So the current situation has generated many financial questions. I'd imagine one of the most thought-provoking in people's mind is, I'm concerned about stock market volatility, stability. So what adjustments, if any, should somebody consider relative to their TSP and or their IRAs?
Sure. Well, I mean, the first thing to separate, I think, when you're answering that question is short-term and long-term. And, you know, being concerned about stock market, you're probably concerned about stock market instability and the volatility in the market, which has been really extreme, of course, during this the whole COVID crisis. And if you have short-term needs, short-term money, that should have never really been exposed to the market in the first place. That's sort of the point of financial planning and setting these things up ahead of time. So you want to always have your short-term money away from the market. For the longer-term money, this volatility comes with the territory. It's par for the course as far as the market's going up and down. Now, granted, this last month we've had the market going up and down 3 to 5% every day, it seems. That's a bit extreme. But we don't want to react to it. If we still have a good long-term focus, we don't want to change course just because of short-term volatility.
Okay, so short-term volatility, if somebody was to look at what they should have in cash or near-term cash, would it be a month, 2 months, 3 months worth of, if you will, operating supplies?
if taking this crisis out of this equation for 1 second, if I'm sitting down with somebody doing planning for them and they ask, how much should I keep in cash or how much should I not have in the stock market? So let's just say their general philosophy is to be pretty aggressive. They want to have everything invested in stocks, but they want to know how much should they keep on the sideline in case something like this were to happen. The answer what I usually give is about 3 to 5 years worth of cash flow, just because, you know, think about it. If you go through this crisis right now and you need money and it's all in stocks, how difficult of a decision that is to make, because now you have to either decide not to spend the money or take it out of the markets at an unfavorable time. So a couple months doesn't really get you through what could be a longer crisis. This one, we don't know how long it's going to be, but certainly the ones we saw in 08, 09 and the one in 2000 through 2002, having 2 or 3 years or even 5 years worth of income, you know, in ready cash or fixed income investments makes a lot of sense.
If I was to try to categorize that, I could look at, okay, I spend X dollars a year on necessities. So I'm looking at the necessities. Mm-hmm. But if I was looking at generating that kind of pot, would I look at maybe 3 month CDs, 6 month CDs, treasuries?
Yeah. Absolutely. And let me be clear on something too. I'm not talking about, after I said it, I realized I wanted to clarify. I don't mean 3 to 5 years worth of living expenses, because you still have income, 3 to 5% of what you might need. In other words, if you're retired and you are living off of a federal pension and you're taking $1,000, $2,000 a month from your TSP or IRA, I would want to be sure that 3 to 5 years of that $2,000 a month was invested in the G fund or in something safer. That's really what I mean. I think the 6 months to a year living expenses is the if I lose my job type situation, so just to make that distinction.
Okay. Now, do people that you work with, do they initially say, gee, that's tight. I don't know that I can do it. So maybe they wade into the water. So they work with 3 months or 6 months. And then once they've done that, they because not everybody has that kind of ready cash to do it. Is it the advice then to say, okay, this is what we have to do, but let's start off with X number of months? Some people will say, okay, I got it, fine. But the other ones might say, well, what do I do, Joe?
Yeah, again, there's two different things, and I want to make sure I'm not confusing it. That the whole idea of having ready cash just in case you have emergencies in your household or you lose your income is a different question, and that is difficult to accumulate, you know, to build up that kind of cash, especially cash that doesn't make a whole lot of money. The question that you initially asked, though, was with the stock market volatility, how should I adjust my long-term investments, my TSP, my IRA, and that's where I put that 3 to 5 year number. So if somebody's a good example, if somebody's 40 years old and working for the federal government and they have their whole TSP in stocks, they don't need to do anything in reaction to this. They can just continue to plug ahead and not overreact to short-term fluctuation because they don't need the money for that time. By the time they retire, the money will have rebounded.
Yeah, and I should enter a comment in here. You know the federal employee because they probably occupy 99% of your client base.
They do. Yeah, okay. That's my world. Yep. So it's really a distinction between what does the working federal employee who's not near retirement do, you know, versus what, which the answer really is probably nothing, and versus what does the retiree do. And that's why whenever I'm meeting with a retiree or somebody close to retirement, we want to make sure we do not have the whole TSP in the stock market.
Okay. And for the near-term retirees, maybe they're 10 years out, and I believe you do a fair amount of mid-career seminars.
Mm-hmm.
Does the focus shift with the dollar magnitude that needs to be in the quick access drawer?
Yeah, it there's two questions, really. One is, no, it doesn't necessarily need to shift to have the money available in cash because 10 years is a long enough time frame to absorb any sort of volatility. But that doesn't mean that that person shouldn't be more conservative. The other reasons that they might be more conservative is they even have a smaller personal risk tolerance, which is totally okay. And when you go through something like this, you realize if you've invested in a higher risk tolerance than you feel comfortable with. I mean, we already have the fear of the virus and the uncertainty in our world right now. Add to that you not being comfortable with the risk you're taking, and you can really make some bad decisions. So, you know, I certainly don't want to imply that everybody with 10 or more years to go until they retire should just bite the bullet and put it all in stock. Some of it does have to do with your own personal tolerance for volatility.
Okay, so then the beginning career person probably doesn't have the heavy dollar demand, but they don't have the heavy income opportunity to do things. So start early. I'm not talking about somebody 1 or 2 years. Let's say they are 5 years mm-hmm. out, and I know the groups you talk to include all the above. So, and generally speaking, I would think somebody new to the workforce is going, I need to save what? I just got out of school, or I just took this job, and I don't have the ability to put that money aside. And I think the response might be, okay, well, put as much as you can.
Yeah, at least 5%. I mean, obviously, you put 5% in the TSP, you get it matched. I mean, that's free money being given to you. You definitely want to take advantage of that. So at least I would be doing 5% in the TSP right off the bat and be aggressive with it.
Okay, good. So then somebody then maybe 5-10 years into the job, and maybe there's a family, maybe there's not, but let's say that there's a family and they're younger children. When should I start putting money away for their post-high school graduation years, be it college, trade school, or the like?
Yeah. I would definitely be doing 5% in the PSP first, and just because your money being matched is such a profound benefit over any other savings you'll do. I would also make sure I did not have credit card debt, because that can be a crippling hurdle to climb out of with 16-17% interest. I think once you've got those two things covered, then you have to weigh your priorities. I mean, this is hard. I always say, as a professional planner, it's hard for me to answer for someone because, you know, I don't know. Some people have the attitude of, look, I worked my way through school. My kids can work their way through school. There are other options to pay for college other than you personally saving for your kids. They can borrow money. There's other options, GI Bill, things like that. So I think it has to do more with your own, you know, own personal priorities. But I certainly wouldn't do it unless I was out of credit card debt and had been putting 5% into the TSP.
Okay, once I've put the 5% into the TSP, I'm no longer just in the workforce. I've been in the workforce maybe 10 years, and maybe I'm fortunate enough to have some money in addition to the 5%. Mm-hmm. Where would I put it? Would I put it in the thrift? Would I go to IRAs? Would I go to the market? What do I do?
If you're saving for retirement, that's where the priorities of your goals come into play. Because a lot of times, you know, say you're talking about somebody who's 10 years into their career. They might be in their 30s or early 40s, have kids to save for to get through college, retirement to save for, and maybe even an elderly parent that they're worried about taking care of. So what ends up happening there is it's so much to juggle that it's hard for somebody to separate, where do I save the money? So the first answer would be, where are your priorities? Where do you want to save the money? The second answer would then be, where's the best tax advantage for me? And that's where, if you're saving for retirement, the TSP beats them all, because the TSP allows you to put money in pre-tax. So beyond the 5%, even maxing the TSP all the way up to the $19,500 number is putting that money away pre-tax. So I would rather someone do that than take home the net amount and go invest it in mutual funds or a brokerage account. The only advantage of doing the latter would be they can access the money before they retire. So that's where the goals and priorities would come into play.
All righty. It's always nice to be able to put money into the TSP. It's a very nice investment. I get a tax deduction if it's the traditional TSP. But let's say I'm lucky enough, years downstream, late mid-career or the like, and I'm going, well, what else can I do? And before you start with an answer with that, the answer is going to take some time, I bet. So why don't we take a break, and we'll listen to what the sponsor of the show, WEPA, can do for our listeners.
You have life insurance to protect the people you love. As a civilian federal employee, you have two choices designed specifically for you, WEPA and Fegley. The big difference? Price. Chances are WEPA premiums will cost you less. In fact, the average WEPA member saves $375 per year on premiums. Prioritize your peace of mind with a life insurance policy designed for feds by feds. If you're a civilian federal employee interested in comparing WEPA to Fegley, visit waepa.org today. WEPA is a proud sponsor of 4-Year Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Network, 1500 a.m. WEPA has been insuring the future of federal workers for more than 75 years. See why over 46,000 feds have already switched to WEPA at waepa.org.
Welcome back to 4-Year Benefit. We're here April 27, 2020. With Joe Sullender. Joe is a certified financial planner. He's a fellow seminar presenter, but he's also the managing director of the Financial Strategies Group with Wells Fargo Advisors. And he was imparting terrific wisdom and ideas prior to the break, so let's keep it rolling, Joe. I even forgot where we were.
That's fine. It's really just a matter of, you know, I think the biggest thing just coming out of the break on people's minds right now is this volatility in the market and what it means for their future plan. And if nothing else, I think the thing I'd like to kind of share with everybody is I think it really illuminates the need for financial planning. I mean, putting a financial plan together, even in a time of crisis, is about keeping your eyes focused on the long term of the plan in spite of the short term. And any good financial plan is going to be able to stomach this sort of volatility, you know, in the short run. And what I find is it gives you comfort. You know, I have clients I talk to every day that they just check in, or I check in with them, and we know that we've planned for this. I always use the analogy of putting up storm windows before the storm comes. You know, once the storm is here, you know you've done what you needed to do to get through it. And, you know, you look back, a person retiring right now who's had their money in the TSP for 30 years has made a lot of money if they've been in the stock funds, frankly made a lot of money, period. And look at all of the turmoil that has happened. You know, we've had the government shut down a couple times. We've had 9/11. We've had, you know, wars and financial crises and the banks failing and all sorts of things. So you kind of look at that history and realize that the long term is where that's the ball you need to have your eye on.
That's a good comment, and it's a good comment, especially today. Not today the day,
yes,
but to our environment today. And it's, you know, people are very anxious that they put their toe in the water when they didn't want to put money in other than the G fund, and now they're anxious about it. But if we were to look at this on a bar chart, I would imagine there's ups, there's downs, but the general, I'm looking at it, the general inclination is it's going to go up over the years.
Well, and I think the trap you can fall into in a time like this is to try to predict the short term, because, I mean, especially, you know, with working from home, I've unfortunately had access to 24-hour news here that I'm normally meeting with people face-to-face and get to avoid. And everyone has an opinion. Everyone has a very strong opinion. Everyone has a prediction. Everyone's using data and charts to tell us here's what's going to happen. The reality is there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty in the short term. But you start thinking, and you ask the average person, where do they think we'll be in 5 years, 10 years? And most of us kind of think we're going to get behind this. This is going to be something, some way, somehow, that won't be our permanent reality. There may be some changes, but eventually, you know, we'll adjust. So if you're looking 5 to 10 years, which is really, like I mentioned at the beginning, what you should be looking at if you're investing in stocks at all, then this is, in some ways, a buying opportunity rather than a reason to panic.
Okay. There's something called a V-shaped recovery, and we have an email from one of the listeners, and I can tell by the question, I think I know who it is, but remains to be discussed 1 year. Does your guest believe that we are going to have a V-shaped recovery? And then what's a V-shaped recovery, Joe?
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a good question to ask right after what I just said, which is, you know, we don't want to spend too much time making these short-term predictions. So let me make a short-term prediction, you know. Let me throw my idea out there. Generally, they talk U-shape, V-shape, you know, W even, which is the trajectory of the recovery. I think the general consensus is that, you know, at some point, this isn't going to be our lives. We're going to open things up again and be living again and spending money again, and businesses will be running. So will that happen in a V, which means we wake up one morning, turn on all the lights, and everything's back to normal and the market takes off? Or is it going to be more of a U, which is a slower upturn? I think one distinction I haven't heard in all of the media that I would want to add here is to separate the industries a little bit. You know, I do think it'll be a V-shaped recovery for a lot of industries that, you know, are going to go right back to work. You know, I think there's going to be some things that we all go do right away, you know. But I don't think it'll be a V-shaped recovery for the restaurants and entertainment industry and things of that nature, where people are, even if the government says, yes, you can go back, may be nervous about it, or we may have another spike in cases. So, again, I wouldn't bet my retirement on whether it's going to be a U or a V, but those are my thoughts about kind of where we are. And I think that division between different sectors is an interesting thing that we've already seen start to happen in this market. We've seen stocks like Amazon and Walmart at record highs rather than, you know, other companies which are in big trouble.
Okay, so if I was listening to the show, I might be saying to myself now, oh, okay, so that's what a V-shaped recovery is. What do I do to position myself to an advantage when the market does pick up or investing does pick up? Not a V necessarily. It might be a slow taxi down the runway, and then we get winds under the wings.
Well, the biggest thing is just staying with your plan, and whether it's a U, a V, or whatever type of recovery it is, as long as it's a recovery, you're going to be fine. So I think if there's any percentage chance that there's a V-shaped recovery, I think what that shows is how important it is that people don't pull money out of the market. I worry a little bit about somebody who says it's one thing to pull money out of the market because you need it. It's one thing to pull money out of the market because your risk tolerance is lower for whatever reason. Or your goals changed. It's something else to make the call of, I'm going to pull money out of the market while the coronavirus crisis is going on, and I'll just watch it and get back in. By making that call, you're timing the market. And so if it is a V-shaped recovery, you could very easily miss the recovery. Now, I'm not saying there is going to be one. We don't know. None of us know. But that's the risk of somebody who says, I'm going to sit on the sidelines and I'll have time to get back in. We don't necessarily know. So my philosophy always is to not try, even though I'm giving my little predictions here, to not try to guess the short term of the market, but to keep your focus on your long-term plan.
Okay, good focus. Now, here's a question, and this is would be boots on the ground knowledge because you've been there and done it. You probably have three different types of clients. Let me talk about the nervous one, and that might even be me. Joe, things aren't looking so good, or they're a little bit better. How do I reposition everything? So talk me off the ledge.
I would just keep giving you the speech that says you have short-term goals, I imagine, and you've got longer-term goals. The short-term goals, hopefully, we've already done the planning and we've got cash on the sideline or we've got money in safer investments. If you have a portfolio with me, for instance, and you're 80% stocks and 20% in fixed income, what I would say is if you need anything in the short term, we can use the 20% that we have in fixed income that isn't down. That'll get us through this crisis to keep us from having to sell stocks. If you have longer-term goals, then it would just be a conversation focusing on those. Where do we really think when we look down the road a year, year and a half, where do we think we're going to be? And if we think we're going to be in a better situation, then it just doesn't make sense to sell in the middle of a negative one.
Now, we've been in a position like this in the investing world prior to today. And brag on yourself a little bit where you took somebody that was just really anxious and wanted to put it all in cash, and you convinced them to maybe do it in baby steps. And after it was all over, they were happy.
Yeah, where you talk someone off the ledge, so to speak.
That's it.
I actually think, and not just for me, but I mean for all financial planners who do this for a living, I would say this is one of the sort of unspoken values of having a financial advisor and planner, and I think a major one. I mean, we all kind of joke in the industry that during this type of crisis is really where we add a lot of value, and I think where having a planner is quite helpful. Just to have someone who's been there, done that, seen it, studied it, and has the perspective in your corner, rather than if you have, call an 800 number and say, I want to sell all my stocks, they're just going to do it. They're not going to try to have a conversation with it. So having, what I try to do during these times, and frankly what I've been doing these last few months, is not necessarily doing a whole lot of buying and selling as much as I am just talking to people and giving them this perspective, about how we've, not only how we've set up the plan to handle this crisis, but what we, focusing on the long-term part of the plan and not reacting to this volatility.
Okay, looking at the long-term and the current environment. Currently, savings, investments are dropping. The decline continues. How do I best manage my cash flow? I think I sort of asked this before, but that cash reserve, short-term, and I guess medium-term, it doesn't have to be cash. It might be, if you will, near-term cash, but you would have a better explanation than I.
Well, let's talk about those. We had two bullet points that were kind of similar. We can kind of group together about, let's take the person that right now is maybe lost their job or needs money for some other reason, and their cash is dwindling. Where should they get the money? How should they manage it? Now, I mean, if that were to be the case and we didn't plan, let's kind of go with it that way. If we have planned properly, we have the cash, and that's okay. But if we don't have that cash and we're thinking, I need money, where should I go first? The first place that I would go is, of course, any short-term money you might have, CDs or savings. But assuming that you don't have that, then we want to try to tap into accounts that have the least tax liability. And right off the bat would be any brokerage account or stocks or mutual funds that you might have are a good place to start as well. If you think it's just a very short-term float, kind of like they're doing with the Payroll Protection Act and the small business loans, you can always set up some sort of short-term borrowing, whether it's a line of credit against your equity or something of that nature. But I would be very, very reluctant to run up credit cards, and I would be very, very reluctant to take money out of my retirement plan. I think if I can get through this crisis with my either cash and short-term savings, taxable investment funds, or some sort of short-term borrowing, that would be the way that I would go.
Okay, when we talk about stocks and we talk about mutual funds, a stock singular is going to be an investment in that company's, they call them stock certificates. So you buy it with the idea that it's going to have a decent, quote, rate of return over the years. In other words, it's going to go up or it's going to provide a cash flow. But all stocks are not created equal. So some stocks are there for dividend reinvestment, which might not give people the growth. And then they have something called a mutual fund. I'm sure everybody listening has heard the term mutual fund, but a stock is singular and a mutual fund is an investment where it has a basket of stocks. Is that the proper terminology?
Right. That is correct. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if I was saying, okay, do they have mutual funds for people that are skittish and initial investors in the market or maybe older ones? So it's designed to provide the person the comfort that the design of the mutual fund is what their goal is rather than just a mutual fund. A mutual fund is a broad category. Specifics would be long-term growth, medium, et cetera. So let's start out at the beginning. Are there funds that are just for, I won't call it quick cash. It's a cash-type fund. It's money that I need.
Yeah. Yeah, I would divide, rather than dividing mutual funds up right off the bat as long-term growth or a category like that, I would start with cash and equivalents, bonds, or fixed income, and stocks. And so all mutual funds fall in one of those three categories. And obviously, on a very basic level, how you allocate your money between cash, bonds, and stocks really drives your overall risk and the volatility of your investments, especially in times like this. Then within each piece of that, there is an array. You know, there's a wide array of stock funds, for instance, that have completely different styles. Some that invest very heavy in dividend-paying stocks or very conservative companies, others that are investing in the next big thing in the high growth or smaller companies or overseas companies. So to me, the key to managing all of that is to have a blend of cash, bonds, and stocks that fits your own comfort level and helps you reach your goals, but then internally in each of the subcategories, diversifying it enough to where you're not carrying too much risk in one particular style.
Okay, so the beginning career person we've covered, and they say, well, what do I do? And your comment, put 5% in the thrift, and then within that, put it where you might want it best, but I think you got to go to the thrift from the get-go.
Yes.
Because it's a match.
And I would add into stocks. I would even add to go to stocks. And, I mean, one point I wanted to make just to think about this, that right now if you were to take a 30-year-old and say, where's your money going to grow the most between now and retirement? I mean, if you put it in the G fund pays the average of the 30-year treasury and the 4-year treasury. Right now, that's like 0.6%, something like that. The dividend yield on the S&P 500, just the dividend on the C fund, is about 2% at the moment. So for a young person, especially in this environment, I would be very excited about putting money into the stock market for the long term.
I've heard it said once from another financial planner, in times of anxiousness, the stock market is on sale. So buy early, buy often.
It absolutely is. Yep.
Okay, so if somebody, I can't do that. But, you know, some people just watch for sales, whatever it might be. It might be groceries, it might be clothes, it might be vacation cars, whatever else. But here, the driver here is the economics.
Yeah, And the enemy of everybody's success, I really believe, is the here and now and the short term and focusing on that. Now, you know, one thing I would differentiate about this crisis than others that I've been reiterating to my clients is we were worried in 08 and 09 that there would be some very, very severe repercussions. You know, we had, you know, Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers go out of business and the banking system under tremendous amounts of pressure. This, I think, is going to have some severe repercussions for certain industries. But for the economy and the markets at large, I do see this as a temporary thing that we will get through. And if we believe in that, then there's no reason to be wavered during a time like this.
Okay, and they should listen to your show. It's available 24/7 on NITP's website, or for the folks listening, or for the folks just catching up because they couldn't listen today.
This well, Bob, since they don't let us do seminars right now, this is all pent up. You know, we don't get to go out and talk to the people about these sorts of things. So having the opportunity to share it to the folks on the radio is great.
Oh, good. Let me pretend then. I think I would fit into the category of somebody in the class that maybe doesn't have a full knowledge of how the interworkings of this. And I might be late mid-career, and I go, Joe, I'm just very anxious. I've put money away. I've put some in the C fund, and I've put – and but I can see the horizon when I'm eventually going to retire. The, you know, the idea of all this is it would add to my cash flow in retirement. Generally, we're talking about a first person, so there's three buckets. But I probably have the best ability to grow the stock bucket, whereas if it's interest sensitive, I'm going to buy the best interest rates at the time. And others might be, I don't want either one of those. I can't take the risk. So let's go with the one that says, I've got the aha moment now. I'm late mid-career. We've talked about stocks. We've talked about mutual funds. And I hope at this point they understand the dynamics of the thrift and the difference in the funds. But outside of that, they might be able to say, I wish I could put more money into the thrift. And again, I'm late mid-career. What do I do outside of this? I've loaded up on my, let's call it a deferred deferred investment as far as taxes go, the thrift, because you only pay taxes on it when you take it out. But then there are other investments where I don't get a tax deduction when I put the money in, but I might want them to grow so that when I do take it out, I pay a lower capital gains tax.
Yeah, well, that'd be the IRA or Roth IRA would be a way that you could put another $6,000 or $7,000 if you're over 50 into a IRA or Roth, and it'll be after-tax money that goes in, but the money will grow either without taxes in the case of the Roth IRA or on a tax-deferred basis in the case of the IRA. So that would probably be the next place to go.
Okay, and you work with normal people, so let me ask a normal person's question. And if I put money into the Roth, Roth TSP, maybe Roth IRA, maybe not, I don't get a tax deduction. I'd really like to get the deduction up front. So somebody has to understand the money dynamics of not getting the tax deduction and putting the money into a Roth.
Well, if you get the tax deduction, like the TSP, for instance, let's take the TSP versus the Roth TSP. If you were to put $19,500 into the regular TSP, it's going in pre-tax, so it's really only reducing your annual take-home pay by $14,000, some number in there, depending on your tax rate. So you're getting $19,500 working for you for $14,000 out of your pocket. If you were to do the Roth TSP, then that $19,500 is going to come out after taxes and reduce your paycheck by $19,500. So a lot of people sort of cringe at that. They say, well, I'd rather get the tax break and put the money in the TSP. The difference is on the back end, the money that you've accumulated in the TSP would be taxable as income rates when you take the money out, where the Roth wouldn't. So that's what you have to kind of weigh, is where the tax benefit helps you more on the front end or on the back end, and a lot of that depends on your time frame, your own tax bracket, and where you expect your tax brackets to be when you retire.
There was a prior director of the thrift that had this great way to look at it. He said, I'm the IRS, and I'm at the door of the investment house. And the question is, when do you want to pay me? Pay me now or pay me later? In other words, do you want the deduction now or do you want the income later? With that,
and much like all financial planning, there's uncertainty. I mean, you can say, well, I'll be in a lower tax bracket when you retire, but you don't totally know that because tax laws change all the time. You know, so there is a certain degree of uncertainty to it, so you're just doing the planning the best you can.
Okay, I think it's time for another break, and we'll let the folks listen to what NITP, the folks that put the show on with the good auspices of WEPA, who sponsors this show.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial, transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit, NITP's weekly radio show, 10 a.m. every Monday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, that is. And we've got Joe Sullender. Joe is a certified financial planner, managing director of the Financial Strategies Group, Wells Fargo Advisors. I have to do that slow, Joe.
You can do it once, too. You don't need to keep
it. It sounds good. Anyway, so we now that we're back here, we've talked a lot of different things and strategies and the like, and it's time for another question. And this question is, these questions, we get a lot of questions. These are focused on whatever the subject is that we're doing. And here it is. It's only a matter of time before inflation comes back in a big way due to the stimulus money given out. How would your guest project one's portfolio? Are bonds or stocks more attractive?
Here's, again, you run into the short-term versus the long-term a little bit, and I'm always very, very wary, and this is just me and my practice, is very, very wary of trying to make predictions about the short-term of the market and things like, I mean, for instance, I would have said 10 years ago, well, inevitably interest rates are going to rise. You know, they're at record lows, and we're seeing a wave this last few months of people refinancing their homes because rates are even lower than they were before. So it's one of those things that you can, any question that starts with, clearly this is going to happen, how should I plan for it, makes me a little bit wary, because then we're using our crystal ball to make wholesale decisions. I think more sound, and that's not to say that there aren't financial planners and people out there that like to do that, that think that they can do that. I prefer to kind of build a weatherproof house, so to speak, you know, that we can allocate our money in a way to meet your goals and be able to win no matter what happens in the short term. And so that would be kind of my focus. And as far as bonds and stocks, what's more attractive? My comment earlier about what the 30-year Treasury and the, you know, what the G Fund and so forth pay right now versus just the simple dividend yield on the stock market. I think there's a reason why interest rates are that low. I think it's quite a compelling case if you have a 10-year, let's say, time frame, that stocks are where you should be. But I hate to say something like that on the radio, because that might not be true for every single individual. They have to look at their own time frame, risk tolerance, and plan.
Okay, here's another bullet point, and I think it's very apropos for today. So the comment is, my savings are dwindling, and if the decline continues, how do I manage my cash flow? Now, why is this so good? I think anybody listening to the show, including Andrew, the engineer, and the two of us, have probably been housebound for a while. So we're not maybe going out, not we're doing real jazzy dinners, and not that we're taking jazzy vacations, but we can't do anything but look out the window. Maybe we can sneak out to the grocery store. But all of a sudden now, we're doing with less than what we were before as far as spending, and we might be saying, there's a message here. I could maybe change some of my lifestyle. Please, folks, don't say change your entire lifestyle as far as spending. But some of the money that we were spending, we might think twice about when things loosen up.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do, Joe?
There's two things I want to hit on that. One is on a personal level. I think that's very, very true that, you know, people can look and see, you know, we're all learning through this crisis how, not only on a personal level, but with your job and your business, how we can do things more efficiently, how the things in life maybe that we thought we needed that we don't necessarily need. I think that's a big, big message for younger people that sometimes do feel overextended, and they're finding that maybe we don't need to spend all this money on all these other things for happiness or for our own lifestyle. The flip side of that, though, is if we were to come out of this and the public were to just say, well, now we don't need, you know, to go to restaurants or go to sporting events or go to Disney World, we don't need to do those things anymore, we're going to just stay home and not spend the money, that could cause a real economic slowdown. And I don't, on a macro level, believe that's going to happen. That's where the people ask the V-shaped recovery. I think there will be some pent-up demand, you know, for, you know, it's not that, well, I lived 3 months without traveling or going to restaurants, well, I don't need to ever do that again. I think it could be very well the opposite, that thank goodness they're letting me out of here now. I'm going to go take a trip.
Okay. All this good information, as well as your knowledge of the federal employee, federal retiree, is there a way to contact you?
Email is by far the best way, especially during this time since we're all working from home. My email is my name, joseph.sullender, at Wells Fargo Advisors, all spelled out with advisors with an O.com. So joseph.sullender at Wells Fargo Advisors.com.
Okay, very good. Now we talk a little bit about taxes. Given the many changes in the income tax rules and regulations, are there some provisions in there that would help us accumulate dollars? Maybe not all, because we got a tax deduction when we put the money in, but a growth pattern over the years. I mean, we want to invest to make money, but maybe we don't need to make it all right away. We want it to grow nicely over the years. So beyond the thrift,
yeah.
I think we got the thrift nailed, but outside of the thrift.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had talked IRA and Roth. That's another place to go. 529 plans would be the place to go for college education savings. Beyond those vehicles, the retirement plan through your employer or through the government, TSP, the IRA and Roth IRA, and the 529, beyond that, there really isn't a whole lot. I mean, I think you're probably saving on an after-tax basis at that point.
And after-tax means... If you
after tax the money doesn't get a deduction going in, and it's taxed while it grows. If there's a silver lining to that, it's that you have constant access to it the entire time, unlike the TSP or the Roth or the IRA.
And income tax rates, and I'm not speaking badly of income taxation in general, but rates, sometimes people aren't necessarily knowledgeable on the taxation because they have their other income, they have their salary, and or they have the annuity, et cetera. But the next dollar that they utilize, they're probably looking at a 25% federal rate. And if there's a state rate, there's another maybe 5% on top of that. I'm not saying taxes are bad, but in the accumulation stage of one's portfolio and their ability to retire, taxation is a major thing to be aware of. I didn't say avoid,
and that's why,
be aware of.
Yeah, and that's why tax-deferred growth, I think, often is a misunderstood benefit and not appreciated enough. The idea that every year your money is earning, you're not paying any taxes on it, means that 20-25%, whatever the rate is, that pull out of your account doesn't happen. So all of that money stays in your account, which allows it to compound on itself. So even though a pessimistic person might say, well, yeah, but then I'm going to withdraw it and I'm going to get hit with taxes. you're still going to end up with more money in your pocket because of the tax-deferred accumulation that you had over your lifetime.
I'm not a financial planner by any stretch of the imagination, but sometimes people will ask me, tax clients, you know, about taxes, you know, this is a good tax deal. And I'll go, maybe it's a good tax deal, but it's always better to have more money after tax than to necessarily save the money when it goes in. So, I mean, there's currently we want to get tax deductions, but we shouldn't necessarily want to get tax deductions just because it's tax deductible. Good example of that is I want a bigger mortgage, so I get a bigger interest write-off on the house.
No. Well, I mean, yeah, exactly. I'll tell you another example is somebody who buys individual stock and it runs up to a huge gain. And you say, well, you really ought to sell some of it, take some of the profits. And they say, well, I don't want to. I don't want to pay the taxes. And then they watch the stock drop 30-40% and wish they had. So, you know, the taxes do keep people a lot of times from making the smartest decisions.
So you're saying spread the wealth, spread the risk.
There's nothing wrong with, hey, having a stock that, you know, you put 10 grand in and grows to 100 grand and you have to pay taxes on the gain. Just think of it that way. That's a problem a lot of us would like to have.
Years ago, my father, when I first graduated from school, I saved before I ate. And my father pulled me to the side. He said, son, let the maws out of your pocket on occasion. True story. Anyway.
That's funny.
So I don't think I'm talking to that group, but some you know, clients, you've got them, I've got them, that you know, taxes, I want to save taxes first, and that's everything. But the eye mm-hmm. on the prize is the economic return.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Oh. And I'll tell you, just firsthand, I'm finding a tremendous amount of resilience from the people I'm talking to. I'm not finding a lot of panic with the folks that I talk to that have the plans in place, and I'm finding people are able to manage through this crisis, the ones that I'm speaking with, and are probably, I have one that's got a cruise book for next January. They're ready to go. So
really?
I think there's yeah, I know, that one I'm a little concerned about, but you know, the just having the right mindset during this too will pass, and we can get through this, you know, both emotionally and financially.
Okay. At the end, with all the knowledge, let's look at the latter stage of one's work career, pre-retirement. Have you found
sure.
some people that are drastically undersaved or they're just not ready to be able to go to the retirement lifestyle because the cash flow isn't there? And we're not talking about somebody that's going tomorrow because they're not going tomorrow. But let's say they're 5 years mm-hmm. out and they go, gee, I've got to save. I've got to change my investment habits, or maybe more importantly, I have to change my spending habits. But let's say that I could change my spending habits, that then I'd have the money to put away. But I'm looking at 5-8 years before I retire. And now when I retire, that doesn't mean I don't need money. But go ahead.
Those are my favorite people. I mean, I have to say to work with, because what those people need more than anything is a plan. They need to know if somebody comes in 5 years out and they know and I know they aren't going to be able to afford to retire when they're eligible 5 years from now. But they're now starting to be concerned about that. They want to have that option. Then how can we plan for that? And I can tell them things like, you know, if you increase your savings a certain amount, or you change your investment mix a certain way, that it'll help get you there. But also, more importantly, how long do you need to work for different levels of income? It may be that if you retire, you can retire in 5 years. You just need to spend about $1,000 a month less than you currently do. And some people take that and go, you know what, I can make that work. I'm going to leave the area. I'm going to downsize my lifestyle. I can do that. Or if you want to maintain your lifestyle, you need to work 8 more years. Well, then now they have their mentally preparedness, you know, in place to be able to know I've got to drudge through for another 3 years. So I think that's why I say it's my favorite group to work with, is because there's planning is what's missing. Planning is what's needed. You can be 30 years old, have no plan, and just invest and end up on the dot. I think somebody 5 years or 8 years away from retirement probably needs to do the heavy lifting.
Okay, so we're 3 minutes away from going off the air. So
yep.
Summarize what we just did, and as you do it, I'll pretend I'm the listener.
And you interrupt me once I pull the plug, or once we need to pull the plug, because I'll go on forever. It's basically the need for long-term financial planning is amplified in times like this. And it doesn't mean that if you didn't do this beforehand, that it's too late. You can sit down right now with a planner of anywhere, not just me, but any financial planner, and get some perspective. I think it's really, really easy to take the market fall and the concern about the virus and extrapolate it to anxiety about your own personal future. And if you have a financial plan that tells you, you know what, even in light of this, your financial future is still on track, it just takes one layer of anxiety away. We all have enough to worry about with loved ones that might be, you know, exposed to this virus or sort of at risk, and our own well-being and health, and when are we going to go back to work and back to a normal lifestyle. So taking that extra layer of the financial anxiety off the table is what careful long-term planning can help you do.
Thank you. Great show. We have how much longer? 1 minute. So how does one get in touch with you again, Joe?
It's my email is joseph.sullender@wellsfargoadvisors.com. And I say shoot me an email with any questions that you have. My joke is that I am now working all the time because, to be honest, what else do we have to do? there's no sports. there's no restaurants. There's nothing to, no travel. So shoot me an email. You'll get an answer from me.
Okay. Well, I might even email you. Joe, thank you ever so much.
Sure. I mean, always a pleasure.
This is rare that we end the show with laughter. So let's do it again.
It sounds good.
All right.
Good talking to you, Bob.
Thanks again. Andrew, thank you for being the masterful engineer. And we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.